Well, already, gang, welcome back to the Gutowski Files, starring Stephen Gutowski. Stephen is in New York City. He is covering the NRA corruption trial. Can I call it a corruption trial? Is that fair enough? I think I can. We'll call it that. It is a trial ongoing in New York City, and today were the final arguments in said trial. First of all, Stephen, you look beleaguered, sir. I take it you've been a very busy man this past week.
Yes. Yeah. It's a lot of travel lately. I was up in Pennsylvania for former President Trump's speech to the NRA at the Great American Outdoor Show. And then now I'm back here again in New York, in Manhattan, for the NRA corruption trial, the end of it. And yeah, so it's been a lot of travel, but I'm doing okay. They keep the courtroom very hot for some reason. It's a very old courtroom. It's a very old courthouse. And so it gets very hot in there, and you have to sit in there for 8 hours or whatever. It is what it is.
Yeah, courtrooms can be painful enough to sit in for long periods of time. The heat cannot help at all. I know, I've done it. You know, when I used to testify in cases that I brought before the federal courts, it became very painful at times to be in there because there's no one to complain to. The judge doesn't care if you're too hot or too cold. You just got to sit there and take it. So I can definitely relate to that. So as I mentioned earlier, today were the closing arguments. Can you kind of break down what went on today and what you think it means?
Yeah, sure. So there's obviously each side gave their closing argument, their basic summary of why they think the jury should side with them. And you had the defense. So you had it's an interesting case, right? Because you have individual defendants, and then you have the NRA as an organization is a defendant as well. So you have Wayne LaPierre, who was obviously the head of the NRA, the executive vice president, CEO for decades until the middle of this trial, when he announced his resignation right before the trial, and then it actually went into effect about halfway through this 6-week trial. Then you had Woody Phillips, who was the former CFO, and treasurer of the NRA. So he was involved in a lot of the financial decisions made during the time periods that are being scrutinized in this trial. And then you have the general counsel, John Fraser, who was the top lawyer at the NRA, by position at least. According to his testimony, he wasn't really making a lot of the legal decisions or really involved in them at all as far as deciding them. But, you know, you have those three, which the attorney general's case, as it stands now, is seeking to force them to repay the NRA for, the sort of a lot of things people have heard of, you know, Wayne's private jet flights or the suits that Akron McQueen bought for him, or, you know, the former top contractor for the NRA. And then they want to hold Woody Phillips responsible for making these sort of poorly vetted contracts with groups like Akron and McQueen or MMR, which is another NRA contractor that's been part of this whole scandal. The guy who owns the yacht that Wayne would travel on owns MMR. David McKenzie is his name. And so they want to hold Woody Phillips responsible for some of the contracts that he agreed to and the way that he operated when the NRA was going through the and doing these things. And then they want to hold John Fraser responsible for, not doing a good enough job in vetting a lot of these arrangements. Things like related party transactions was another aspect of the case where the NRA was paying its board members for all sorts of different things. That's a big component of the AG's case as well. And then they want to, interestingly, they want those people to pay the NRA back for damages associated with, misuse of NRA funds or mismanagement of the group or not fulfilling your fiduciary responsibility, those sorts of things. And at the same time,
started cut you off. Do you happen to know, did any of these defendants, the individual defendants, have to file anything like a financial disclosure? Do we know if they could even repay these immense sums of money if they wanted to, even if they were found to be liable for that monetarily? Could they actually pay this money back?
Yeah, that's a good question. It kind of depends on what the jury finds them liable for having to pay back, I think. I will say that Woody Phillips, the former treasurer of the NRA, former CFO, he, chief financial officer, his lawyer said that he would be bankrupted by having to repay millions of dollars if that's the case. And so he made a big deal about that during his closing arguments, that Woody Phillips does not deserve to be bankrupted. He doesn't deserve, he didn't harm the NRA, was his argument. Obviously they all argued that they were effectively, not guilty of what the AG is accusing them of, or at least not to the full extent that she's accusing them. But yeah, so that did come up in terms of whether or not these guys can actually repay this money is an open question. When the AG got to the end of her closing arguments, she tallied up some of these expenses, and like the flights with Wayne LaPierre, just the normal ones were somewhere north of $10 million. The ones that were just his family and not him were over $1 million. They said that there was this TV contract that wasn't being fulfilled anymore, but was still being paid for a long time, that the NRA had with one of its, with the David McKenzie company, a different company of his, a TV production company. It was a TV show called Critical Strike. It was sort of a reality, like recreation of Defensive Situation Show, but like they stopped making it at some point, and the AG is accusing them of continuing to pay out this contract when they weren't getting anything in return. And that was $13 million. So, and that, it seemed like she wanted the jury to consider splitting up how much of that they think each one of these people who was responsible for that contract, whether it's Wayne or Woody or Frazier, should have to pay back that sum. So it's a lot of money. And it certainly, I feel like it probably could bankrupt all of them. Obviously Wayne made a lot of money during his time at the NRA, but I don't know that he has that kind of cash reserve to pay back tens of millions of dollars if he's ordered to.
Yeah. And, I'm going to editorialize here for a moment so Stephen can distance himself from my personal opinion on things. But this is my personal opinion on things. I don't think any thinking person really believes that the Attorney General of the state of New York really just wants to help the NRA, carve out the cancer and get better and become stronger. I'm pretty sure she would like to put them out of business if she could.
And actually, before you finish that thought real quick, that is a key part of the defense that was put on by Wayne LaPierre and the NRA, which again, some of this is a little bit hard to navigate, I think, but they're separate entities in this case. Like Wayne LaPierre has his own lawyer, and the NRA has its own lawyer. Now they're sort of related because Bill Brewer is the firm that's representing the NRA, and a former associate of his is representing Wayne. But but they are separate, and they're presenting separate, though very similar defenses, I think, in a lot of cases. But that is one of them, right? That it's not believable that she is working in the best interest of the NRA by bringing this case. That's one of the things that they claim. Because as we know, the Attorney General has made a number of very, very aggressive political statements about the NRA especially during her campaign to become Attorney General. Mm-hmm. She called them a terrorist organization, for instance, said she would investigate them, and that they were, not a charity. And she did try to dissolve the organization. That was one of her initial attempts in this case, was to get the organization completely shut down. Now that failed. The judge rejected that. Of course, the judge also rejected this sort of defense of the NRA's actions based on the politics of the Attorney General as well. So this was brought up in closing arguments, but it's not necessarily a valid legal defense for the accusations. But it is something that came up, and that the NRA and Wayne LaPierre especially has been talking about. There was a line where his lawyer said, in effect, that Letitia James, the Attorney General, wanted to take down the NRA, and to do that, she needed to take down Wayne LaPierre. That was part of his defense.
Yeah, the rest of my thought was going to be, and still is, with that said, right, with her, what I suspect are her true intentions aside, if Wayne LaPierre spent $10 million in anything, I don't care if it's suits, private jets, or all of the above, that didn't need to be spent from the NRA's funds. If, you know, if look, he can spend the money he makes in the NRA any way he wants. That's entirely, you know, he's a free American. Do whatever you want with that money. With the NRA's money, I would prefer how many. I went through their shotgun pistol law enforcement course when I was still active duty law enforcement. Fantastic class, by the way, if you can get it. 2-week class, did a lot of shooting, a lot of uncomfortable stuff, but it was really, really good. And I gained a lot from that. How many of those classes could we have put on, right, all over the country? How many patrol carbine classes could we have put out for law enforcement all over the country? How many, you know, shooter safety classes? How many basic NRA instructor classes? How many, you know, things could we have done in Congress, for example, that didn't get done because the money wasn't there because they were spending it on dumb stuff, quite frankly. That's just my two cents. With that said, what is kind of the feeling? I assume on breaks you talk to other people, other reporters. What's the sense of how it's going in general? Can you give us a feel for it?
Yeah, I mean, to me, you know, watching all this and watching the last, you know, the days that I was able to attend when Wayne LaPierre testified, and, you know, at the end of the AG's case and then these closing arguments. One thing I'll say is this is a pretty complex case, right? I mean, you know, at its core, it's fairly simple, right? It's sort of misappropriation of charity funds and mismanagement of the charity. You know, that the essentially the allegation is that the NRA didn't do enough to reform itself when it found out about all these issues, because that's part of their defense as well, that they've reformed since they found out about this stuff. Starting back in 2018, but obviously the AG's point of view is that they didn't do nearly enough. You know, Wayne LaPierre was still he was at the center of most of this stuff, and he was still the head of the NRA until just a couple weeks ago, or right. 2 weeks ago, I guess at this point. And so, you know, that central part is pretty simple, but there's a sort of line, obviously, between poorly managed funds or like bad ideas on things to spend money on and actual expenditures that violate the law because they were either self-serving or completely personal in nature, things like that. And so some of this case will come down to where that line is for the jury, right? I think. And so that you're going to have to go through all the different expenditures. There's a lot of them. This is years of spending at a major organization that has millions of members and has been a several hundred million dollar a year organization for a long time. So, and then of course, on the other side, you also have sort of technical legal arguments about what is a whistleblower under the New York statute. Yeah, that's another thing. Like there may be, from the outside or like a layperson's point of view, it's if anybody who speaks up and, you know, brings accusations against the organization's spending or, you know, some of this stuff, might consider that just a whistleblower, but there's obviously a legal definition of what a whistleblower is under the law and what retaliation is under the law as well. And so there's going to be these fine points where they have to go through as a jury and decide which of these things crossed the line and which of them maybe didn't. And so that's why I don't expect that the NRA is going to get a total victory by any means. I think one thing I always think back to is like the bankruptcy, right? Was the whole point of the bankruptcy was to avoid this case. Mm-hmm. They were trying not to have this case happen in this court. And that gives you, I think, a pretty good indication of how they felt about their own case. And so I don't know that haven't been any sort of revelations that change everything that have come out since that happened. So I don't know why the calculation would have changed, but you know, they put up a competent defense of themselves, I think. And so we'll have to see where it shakes out, but I would expect that it's not going to, all the charges are not going to get tossed away. There was a directed verdict from the judge earlier this week where essentially he eliminated some of the charges against, especially the individual defendants. He felt that they were duplicative. So basically, they're already facing a similar charge. And there was a section of charges that came out of a specific kind of law, a trustee law, that would have defined trustee under the New York law very broadly. And he wasn't comfortable with that. And he felt like the charges were duplicative. So he got rid of them. I don't know how much that changes the case or not, but it's obviously a positive thing for the defendants. But I just would be hard pressed to see them getting completely exonerated in it by any means tomorrow when the verdict comes. Hopefully, if it comes in tomorrow, we'll see. Might take a little while because
it sounds like there's a lot for the jury to pour over, and hopefully, you know, you never know. We used to joke, you know, that you never know what 12 licensed drivers are going to come up with at the end of the day. You just don't know. You think you know, but you don't. And hopefully they look over all the evidence carefully and they ask all the right questions and come to the right verdict. Last question for you, because I know you're busy. You got to go. You got CNN. You got your own stuff to do. But just for the organization itself, never mind the individual people that are also being that are also on trial here. For the NRA, what is the worst case scenario that could come out of this if they lose everything? What happens to the NRA, and what can members, many of whom listen to this show, can they anticipate any blowback for them? Does the organization go away entirely, or is it under some sort of advisory board where the government steps in and makes sure they're making the right decisions, or what does it look like?
Yeah, well, somewhat ironically, part of it, if the AG gets everything that they want, if the jury grants, you know, sides with the AG on everything, part of what happens is the NRA gets a bunch of money from these guys, or right, whatever they can recover from them. Now, it's not going to be, you know, the NRA, the size of the NRA, it's not, you know, a couple million dollars for them is not going to change the direction of the organization. Sure. But that's one thing that would happen. But the other more important thing is that and this will actually be up to the judge, not the jury. The jury will make a decision on they'll be the fact finders. They're the ones who decide whether or not these charges met the standard they needed to. Mm-hmm. And they'll give a damages estimate as well, but they won't decide everything. The judge will decide something. So after that, if the jury makes their decision, then the judge will decide what to do. And one of the things he can do is appoint a monitor to, as you sort of alluded to there, to look over the NRA's finances and operation to ensure that there's no issues. And I believe that they'll have the power to fire people or reorganize the organization, at least to some extent. So, you know, one of the outcomes of the case might be a reorganization of the NRA. It wouldn't be an elimination of it. It won't be dissolved. It won't be shut down. But you could see forced reform happen there, which is why you see some of the people who have, especially past and current board members, actually, Owen Buzz Mills has mentioned this as a potential positive thing for the group, if that's the outcome, because it would obviously, it could result in some of the people who currently control the NRA and Wayne's close allies being removed, which is obviously what a lot of reformers have wanted for a long time but haven't been able to achieve. So, you know, we'll see. That would be the big outcome. I think there's also that's sort of the legal side of it. More and more, I'm wondering about the impact beyond the legal side. You know, even if that happens or whatever happens, honestly, one way or the other, I think it's going to be a long road for the NRA to get back to where it was, if it can. We've talked about this before, but I think there's still a very strong brand there. And if they are able to convince people that they've reformed, that there's no more issues, then you could see them come back. But that's a hard road, even in the best of times. And they haven't been focused on making major changes to who's running the organization. Like, this was the big problem with their whole reform pitch, is like they've kept all the same major players in control during this time when they're supposed to be reforming. And I think that's, I mean, you've seen it with how people talk about not wanting to give to the NRA until Wayne is gone. I've seen that sentiment a lot over the years. And he wasn't gone for this. It's been And, you know, the NRA says they first found out about these issues in 2018, which is sort of questionable, right? I mean,
sure.
Given that who's at the center of them and that they, this Ackerman-McQueen NRA relationship goes back to the 90s and caused internal turmoil back in the 90s, actually. But, you know, but when let's say it first broke 2018 when there was a Wall Street Journal story, and then the 2019 members meeting at the annual meeting was the first real big blow up inside, you know, an official NRA event. And it's been 5 years since then. And only now has Wayne resigned. And he resigned on his own, of his own accord. He was not fired or punished in any way. So it's hard, I think, to make. It'll be hard for them to make a convincing case to the people who left over all this that right. They should come back. Even if everybody does get removed and it's a whole new organization, I mean, you can look at some of these other prominent organizations that have gone through much less severe situations than this. Susan G. Komen Foundation, the Race for the Cure people, Wounded Warrior Foundation, if you remember there. Now, the Komen thing, there was politics involved too, the Planned Parenthood stuff, but there was also accusations of, lavish spending by the head of the group and this sort of over-reliance on them and their ego and so forth that caused a lot of problems. And they were going to reform, but the head didn't resign for like a year after the issues came up, and they still aren't back to where they were. And they were, you know, probably maybe even a more prominent organization than the NRA at their peak. The Race for the Cure stuff was,
Big
pink ribbons, right? And then Wounded Warrior Foundation was a similar situation where they had a big controversy over lavish spending on, you know, employee retreats. And that neither one of those organizations had this kind of attorney general investigation and trial and all the stuff that's going on with the NRA and drug out for years. They both tried to react fairly quickly to the problems. The Wounded Warrior Foundation, you know, they fired everybody and brought in new leadership after that happened. And they both still have problems right. with winning back trust from their donors. And so that's the other thing that I think you'd worry about with the NRA and its future at this point. It's been five Absolutely. Years since this broke in the open, and you know, how much longer until people are willing to, if ever, come back and join again.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, folks. Stephen will have an eye on the NRA regardless of the outcome of this. So this is a good place to go to get information on that moving forward. Obviously, we'll cover the verdict and the fallout after that next week or as soon as it happens. Stephen, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day in your luxurious Manhattan hotel room. If you can't see, folks, if you're not watching, beautiful skyline out behind him. It's lovely. Way better than
Chinatown. Yeah.
Way better than that silly set you have at home. I'm kidding.
I'd much rather be at home. But
yeah, I'm sure.
This is not a bad hotel for the price that I paid. So
we're going to let Stephen go about his business and go on CNN and write his article.
Yes, 11 o'clock. People should see, because this will probably be out before then, right?
Hopefully, I can get this out quickly. So right now it is 6:13 Eastern on February 15th. So hopefully you'll get out in time that you can catch him on CNN. Stephen, as always, sir, I appreciate you coming on the show and giving us your valuable insight. Folks, go over to thereload.com and consider getting a membership. Stephen does rely on your membership dues to fund his important work. This is a prime example of what I'm talking about. He's up in New York. He's in Pennsylvania. He's all over the place doing the best he can to bring us this news that, in a way, in a same sober way, that I don't know anyone else is doing. And I love that about Stephen. That's why he and Active Self-Protection mesh so well together and make for good team. Stephen, I'm going to let you go. Have a good night's sleep after you get done with all your hard work. And as always, sir, you have the last word.
Absolutely.